Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility, sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances and other live events. Accessible Cinema.
Welcome to FRAD Accessible Cinema, FRAD's program on media accessibility and inclusion, to inform you about the status of accessibility in the media industry. This is our fourth episode. The third one was again a great success. We received many enthusiastic comments from all over the world, so a big thank you to all our listeners. But this one is going to be a very special episode of Accessible Cinema, because today it's the 16th of May, the 8th Global Accessibility Awareness Day. As you all know, FRAD has always been committed to accessibility and social inclusion. So today we want to get everyone talking, thinking and learning about access and inclusion. And we will start with the latest news on accessibility. For instance, did you know what happened in March 2019? Well, a plenary session of the European Parliament passed the European Accessibility Act, which aims to ensure that products and services are more accessible for persons with disabilities. If you want to know more, visit the European Commission's website. And did you know what happened in April 2019? Well, the LEGO Foundation and LEGO Group embarked on a pioneering project that will help blind and visually impaired children learn Braille in a playful and engaging way using Braille customized LEGO bricks. Instead of the normal dots you see on top of LEGO bricks, this version will be set up with the same patterns as the Braille alphabet. Each brick will also have a printed letter or number, and sighted people can then interact with the objects too for a real inclusive experience. So, the European Parliament and LEGO are trying to make a difference. And what about us? What can we do today on Global Accessibility Awareness Day? Well, today we want to help spread the word to increase everyone's knowledge and understanding with this special episode of Accessible Cinema. We will be bringing some excerpts from past interviews with end users, scholars, professionals and experts in accessibility interviewed for FRAD from different contexts and countries and who told us why accessibility matters to all of us. So today, after learning what Global Accessibility Awareness Day is, we will see, first of all, how we can define accessibility, looking at it from different angles. And then we will go through some major projects dealing with accessibility that have been carried out so far. As we will see, many of them share the same objective: making services and products more inclusive and accessible. But what are the options available? What can we do to make, for instance, media services accessible? Well, we'll try to answer these questions together with our guests. But there is a further question to be answered, especially on this very special day, Global Accessibility Awareness Day. That is, what is the future of accessibility? So, if you want to know more about the past, the present and the future of accessibility, do join us to promote Global Accessibility Awareness Day. We'll be back soon.
FRAD Film Radio.
Accessible Cinema.
Welcome back to this special episode of Accessible Cinema. Today we are celebrating Global Accessibility Awareness Day. But what is Global Accessibility Awareness Day? Let's start then with our first guest. We are going to listen to an excerpt from an interview with Pilar Orero, full professor of audiovisual translation at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, who will tell us more about this special event. Just let me remind you that this, but also our next interviews, are all available on FRAD's website. Pilar, first of all, what is Global Accessibility Awareness Day and what is its purpose? Because I know that everything started with the publication of a blog post written by a web developer.
Yeah, and then it was the suggestion
of perhaps making a day across the globe for everybody to start doing activities for accessibility, mainly media accessibility. And then from there on, it took, and very, very slowly has been growing. But yeah, it's the idea is to have a day like Mother's Day or like Father's Day or like any of these days, Disability Day, 3rd of December, where people will organize activities around accessibility.
So it's a day in which we have the chance to think about and to learn about accessibility somehow. So, well, the message is as a community, we can work together to change things. So what can we do to get involved, to take part in this global conversation on accessibility? For instance, are you planning some special events? Are there any related projects?
First of all, how to get involved, just organize something and then let them know. Let this guy who started, you do it online, and it's very simple. So yes, I think it would be fantastic if everybody organizes something, if not for this year, perhaps for next year. And then it grows, the idea of an accessibility day. What are we doing this year? Well, we're just offering again all the results and all the solutions and all the things that we've been doing for many years. But this year we're adding the immersive environment dimension to it. Mm-hmm. We have an Age 2020 European project on immersive accessibility. That is how to make 360 media accessible with subtitles, with audio description, with audio subtitling, with easy to read, and with sign language interpreting. And then we already have solutions for this because we've been working on it for a year. As part of the project with our RNIB, with Sonali Rai, and they've developed an app for augmented reality that you have in your mobile phone. And then you can simulate how people with a sight issue sees around you. So you download the application, then you open the application, and then you choose which of the issues you can have. For example, cataracts, which is the most common sight problem for low vision. And then you just put your phone like it, as if you were going to take a photograph, and then you see the world around you as if you had cataracts. And that's very nice. So we're going to do that, and RNIB is going to do that as well, and we'll do that sort of like a joint thing. They'll allow us to use their app. Well, anybody can use their app, but they allow us to use the app for this showcase.
We have just listened to an excerpt from an interview with Pilar Orero, who gave us a snapshot of Global Accessibility Awareness Day. As Pilar said, Global Accessibility Awareness Day has grown rapidly in its short lifetime. This because today accessibility itself has become a key issue in many different contexts. But how can we define accessibility? If you want to know more about this, stay with us. We will be right back.
Fred. Hello and welcome to Fred Film Radio. I'm Amani Mohammed.
Fred Film Radio, sono Paolo De Marchi.
簡単に その先生の作品の紹介を
Fred Film Radio, Sundana Knight.
Clémence Ferry-Latour for Fred Film Radio, en direct du Festival de Cannes.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
Accessible Cinema, this is a special episode celebrating accessibility on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. But what is accessibility? Let's listen to four excerpts from four interviews with experts coming from different countries and working in different contexts. We will first hear from Agnieszka Sarkowska, assistant professor in the Institute of Applied Linguistics, University of Warsaw, who will bring us a scholar's perspective on accessibility. Then with Lorenzo Puntoni, film director, followed by Joshua Branson, accessibility. film director, we will see how we can define media accessibility when it is integrated in the filmmaking process. And finally, with Marcel Bobeldick, president of the European Federation of Hard of Hearing People, we will look at accessibility from a user's point of view.
How can we define media accessibility today, Agnieszka?
I think it's a very good question, and it was, when I look back, I think media accessibility, from our perspective, was sitting in audiovisual translation. So we had this larger umbrella term of translation studies, and within translation studies, we were audiovisual translation people, AVT. And then there was this marginalized area, which was called media accessibility. That was a couple of years ago, many years ago. And now, I think a lot of people are starting to say, and I think it was started by like Gian Maria Greco and Pablo Romero Fresco and many other people, like they started to say, well, maybe media accessibility is actually a larger umbrella term that includes audiovisual translation. And I think even Jorge Díaz-Sintas wrote it in one of his papers that accessibility is providing services, providing content for people who wouldn't otherwise have access to something. So when you think about regular translation like subtitling or dubbing, and you're providing content to people who wouldn't understand the film without this. So it's form. Yeah. So it's like flipping over the original definition, actually. And so that's the idea. This is what we've been talking about recently. It hasn't actually found its realization into structures like the university structure, departmental structure. So that's far from there, but we're going there, hopefully.
Accessible cinema.
Could you provide us with your own definition of accessibility? So what is accessibility?
If I had to choose a word, I choose research, because for every director or every productions could be very important to try to find a view to arrive to everyone. Mm-hmm. So research a new kind of point of view to speak to a blind person is very important, and I think that is very interesting for the director and his point of view, artistic point of view, but also for the production or distribution, because you can give more possibility to everyone, and the product have more possibility to make money. Mm-hmm. Also.
Accessible cinema.
How can we define media accessibility? Could you provide us with your own definition of accessibility?
Yeah, that's quite tricky, I suppose. To my mind, media accessibility is about trying to create equal access to the filmic experience. And I'll talk about film here because that's the area that I'm working on. So it's not necessarily about providing kind of equivalence in terms of the experience, but it's about the extent to which we can create the same opportunity and the same access for viewers that are visually or sensory impaired. And so it's about trying to create, in the context of film, equal access to that experience, and in some ways moving beyond, and this is what accessible filmmaking is sort of advocating and trying to propose, is moving beyond basic considerations of plot and comprehension, and actually looking at how we can create access to form as well. In the terms of, you, I would say, kind of tone and viewpoint in the context of film, camera movement. So I think that's where the research in accessible filmmaking is kind of heading. I've probably given quite a specific definition there because it's very much related to the work that I'm doing.
Accessible cinema.
What does accessibility mean for people with a hearing loss, Marcel?
In short, primarily, that we can participate in all levels of a society. When we talk about education, that the parent can make a decision that the hard of hearing child go to special education, or that they have also the possibility that the hard of hearing child participate in the regular education, but then with technical support and a hearing loop system or an extra teacher or speak-to-text support in the class. And that is also, but in education, that is also same at work, so that all hard of hearing people have the same possibilities at the labor market, so that they can do all the jobs that they like to do. And also there, sometimes with support, with speak-to-text support. For example, me, when I participate in a meeting with more than 20 people, I have always a speak-to-text reporter or interpreter with me. And here in the Netherlands, it's not very easy to do that because there are a lot of speak-to-text reporters. So that the most important is that we can participate in the society on all levels.
These are the four definitions of accessibility provided by Agnieszka Sarkowska, Lorenzo Puntoni, Joshua Branson and Marcel Bobeldich. Four different but complementary perspectives, ways of interpreting accessibility. As our guest said, in today's increasingly socially aware society, issues of accessibility are brought to the forefront of political, cultural and social debate, both at national and international levels, also thanks to numerous projects focusing on accessibility. Well, if you want to know more about this, don't miss our next guest. We will be back soon.
It is estimated that 1 in 6 people have some sort of sensory impairment or disability, which means that 1 in 6 people cannot fully understand your film without subtitles for the deaf or hard of hearing, as well as audio descriptions for the blind or visually impaired. SubT Access generates accessible versions of films and makes media content accessible to a sensory impaired audience. SubT Access, access services for the media. SubT Access, your vision for all. SubT.com.
Accessible Cinema, this is Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and this is a special episode, an opportunity to reflect on accessibility in its many forms, research, policies, practice, to name but a few. And it is precisely the successful marriage of practice and research that is critical to the development and implementation of high-quality accessible services. So, with our next guest, we will embark on a journey through different countries and contexts to discover some of the main projects dealing with accessibility. We will start with Pablo Romero Fresco, honorary professor at the University of Roehampton, interviewed by our Chiara Nicoletti, who will tell us more about the Media Accessibility Platform project and accessible filmmaking. But how can we measure quality in accessibility? Well, Gian Maria Greco, Marie Zlodowska-Curie Individual Fellow at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, interviewed again by our Chiara Nicoletti, is trying to answer this question with the Understanding Quality in Media Accessibility project. And quality is also training. So Anna Matamala, senior lecturer at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, will present the Accessible Culture and Training Project. Quality training in real-time subtitling across Europe is the focus of the LiveText Access project, presented by Rocío Barnabé, LTA project coordinator and tenured lecturer at the SDI in Munich, and Pilar Herrero, one of the partners of the project. Let's listen then to these three excerpts, and if you want to know more about these projects, Well, don't miss the whole interviews on Fred's website.
So you're also the leader of MAP, Media Accessibility Platform, that you founded together with three researchers, Gian Maria Greco, Anna Matamala, Pilar Lorrero. What is MAP and what's its purpose, mission, vision?
Well, MAP is a platform that intends to bring together and act as a repository for the large and very vast amount of information available around the world about media accessibility, whether it is to do with training, research, even practice or legislation. We found that a lot of work is being done in this area, but sometimes it's a little bit fragmented. So we wanted to have a little bit of a, if you like, a house where we can host that information, and it becomes a reference for people who want to find out more about the area and what's been done on this area around the world.
It's an house and it's a family and it's a network.
Yes, that's the plan, yeah, exactly. Bringing together researchers, practitioners, and whoever needs to find more information about this.
I don't want to, I want to, you already told me that, but I just want to remind our listeners that you're also a filmmaker, so you're working on accessible filmmaking, which aims to integrate translation accessibility as part of the filmmaking process. You also did, with your first documentary, Joining the Dots, it was used by Netflix, right? And schools around Europe to help raise awareness about audio description.
Yes, that's
right. Are you working on something else at the moment? As filmmaking part?
Yeah. I'm working on a long feature documentary that we've been working on for the past 3 years, and that's it's called Where Memory Ends, and we're editing it now. And it's a film with a historian called Ian Gibson, who is the person who has been the biographer for the three most important artists in Spain in the 20th century, Salvador Dali, Luis Buñuel, filmmaker Luis Buñuel, and Federico García Lorca. Ian Gibson is now very, very close to finally finding the remains of García Lorca in Granada. He knows where they are, but he's not had permission yet to find them. But it looks like now we're very close to finding them, and we are documenting this because it could be the beginning of a new stage in the country as a symbol of all the people who have been buried after the Civil War and have not been looked for. So it looks like there's a new stage, there's a new era in the country now for us to finally kind of face up to what happened. And we're trying to, and we're basically making this documentary with the person who's leading this process, and who's very close to, after 65 years of work, finding those remains of Federico García Lorca and opening up this new state in the country. So this will be an accessible documentary, and we have integrated notions of translation and accessibility from the very first moment from pre-production.
Accessible cinema.
So what is UMAC and what is its purpose? I mean, what was the aim of the project?
Well, UMAC is, as you said, is a Marie Sklodowska-Curie individual fellowship. So its part has been funded by the Marie Sklodowska-Curie Actions Program of the European Union, the European Commission. And it will last 2 years. And it's based at the Transmedia Catalonia Research Group in the Universitat Autonoma de Barcelona. The aim of the project, which is an acronym for Understanding Media Accessibility Quality, is to try precisely to understand what quality in media accessibility is. The very general idea is that part of the disagreement that we have been facing is due to the lack of a theoretical framework. We have been doing a lot of practical work, test reception studies, as they are called, with end users. We have been developing and even implementing and promoting the implementation of guidelines, of standards, but they are not. There is some of them are mutually exclusive. they are not so compatible. And this is a bit strange, because the way we see the world, it's obviously different, but also every one of us uses the same brain, the same physiological mechanism, and so on. So we should, there should be somehow a common way. And here comes the UMAC project, the idea that probably we've been focusing too much on the final end, the reception studies, the practical side, which is crucial, of course, but we've been missing, we are still missing a theoretical framework, and any other aspects of human theory and knowledge and life has both theory and practice. So the idea will be, okay, let's go back to theory and see if we can find a theory, or at least a theoretical framework wide enough to provide some form of scheme where we can have a commonly agreed upon definition of quality, but that at the same time is not too broad to become vague and useless, so that it can be then adapted on a context-dependent basis.
Accessible cinema.
Anna, I know that you either coordinated or participated in more than 35 national and international research projects, but today I would like to focus on the Accessible Culture and Training Project, which teamed up for its final conference with the Unlimited Symposium, which took place in Barcelona on the 6th of June 2018. Fred was a media partner of the event. So, Anna, could you please tell us more about this project?
Well, this project, Accessible Culture and Training, is a project led by Pilar Orero at UAB. And it will finish very soon. We are in the last year. And in this project, what we tried is to define the profile of the accessibility manager for the scenic arts. Okay, let me put an example. You work in a theater, okay, mm-hmm. and you want to provide accessible performances. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, theaters don't have a person dealing with accessibility, okay? So we need someone in that theater who knows what access services need to be offered, how I can contact a service provider, how can I cater for the user needs, etc. So there is really a need to have an expert in accessibility in the scenic arts. Mm-hmm. And this person can be based in a theater, work in a cultural venue, in an opera house, whatever, or maybe can be someone coordinating different places, mm-hmm. different centers. So to define that accessibility manager profile, what we did was, together with many partners, check what's being done at European level. Then we defined the skills and competencies that managers should have. Mm-hmm. We designed a curriculum. So if a university wants to offer some training, what they should offer. And that's very, very interesting, we've developed a MOOC, a massive open online course, mm-hmm. which is now already available on Coursera. So if I may add a commercial here.
Yes, of course.
Go and check that course on Coursera. It's free and it will allow you to get in a few weeks, you know, the needed training to become an accessibility manager.
Accessible cinema.
Now you are currently working together on the LTA project, which stands for Live Text Access, right?
Yeah.
Rocio, what is Live Text Access, first of all, and what are the main objectives of this project?
Well, our project is all about intralingual real-time subtitling, mm-hmm. about the provision of the service. I mean, the main aim of the project is to create training materials for training real-time intralingual subtitlers. The thing is, at the moment, the situation in Europe is like you have the situation, you have the legislation, you have the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, you have the Audiovisual Media Service Directive, mm-hmm. the Accessibility Act, you have all this legislation triggering actually to provide services. So you see the market and you have the providers providing the services, the subtitling. You have the educational sector, which is actually creating training and training professionals. Mm-hmm. But we see you have the users as well, and the users are saying that the quality of the service that is being provided at the moment is not regular enough or good enough.
It's not
sometimes.
Good enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's actually where we came into action, where we said, okay, so we can get together, bring the industry together, the service providers, bring the education as well in the project, and then create teaching materials for training good real-time interlingual subtitlers. And that's actually how everything started. And I must say, that wasn't my idea. Pilar has to take credit for this one. She was the one who started, initiated, actually. Yes, it was you.
Okay, it was me, but you need a seed, and you planted the seed.
I submit it, that's true.
I would have never come up with the idea of easy to read subtitles or easy to listen or the description if it hadn't been because Rocío's MA dissertation was on easy to read.
These are some of the main projects that have been carried out so far in the accessibility field. We started with the Media Accessibility Platform project that, as Pablo Romero Fresco said, aims to map media accessibility in Europe and beyond. So visit MAP's website, mapaccess.org, to find more about media accessibility, but also to listen to Fred Accessible Cinema. Pablo also told us more about accessible filmmaking, a potential way to integrate media accessibility during the filmmaking process and improve its quality. And quality, as Gian Maria Greco said when presenting the Understanding Quality in Media Accessibility project, must be the main goal of accessibility providers, but also trainers. This is why, as Anna Matamala said, the Accessible Culture and Training Project was launched to define a new professional profile, the Media Accessibility Expert Manager for the Scenic Arts. And speaking of professional profiles, one of the main aims of the LTA project, presented by Rocío Barnabé and Pilar Orero, is precisely to harmonize the professional profile of real-time subtitlers across Europe. But real-time subtitling is just one of the many ways we can choose to make an audiovisual product accessible. So, if you want to know more about the available solutions, well, stay with us. We will be right back.
Fred.
This is Natasha Sinjanovic for Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, z vami sam Borko Teršek.
Fred Film Radio, sono Angela Prudenzi.
Essa è Fred Film Radio, io chiamo Marianne Morissau, do Festival di Berlino.
Angela Cerbi per Fred Film Radio, on è al Festival di Venice.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
Accessible cinema on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. We are talking about media accessibility, inclusion, and the need to provide high-quality media accessibility. But what can we do to make media products and services accessible? We have many different options, also depending on the context and our users' needs. Today, starting from cinema and live events, we will explore audio description with two major audio describers and audio description trainers, Dr. Luis Fryer and then Dr. Joel Snyder. Moving from cinema to television with Annalisa Sandrelli, lecturer at Università degli Studi Internazionali in Rome, interviewed by Federico Spoletti, we will first learn what respeaking is and how it fits with media accessibility as a whole. Then Miriam Angman, International Project Coordinator at Public Broadcasters at DF Digital in Germany, will tell us how live subtitles are made through respeaking at ZDF Digital. And speaking of live subtitling, we will then hear from Wim Gerbex, co-founder of Veliotype, about the Veliotype keyboard. What is audio description and where does audio description fit with accessibility as a whole?
Okay, audio description is a way of making any types of media accessible to people with no vision by use of words. It fits alongside other accessibility modes such as subtitling or surtitling to enable people with any kind of sensory disability to engage with the arts fully.
Accessibility practices can be embedded into the creative process, and the audio describer can even become a character within a given production, and this is what you call integrated audio description. Can you tell us more about this phenomenon?
Yes, I think this is really growing, and this definitely reflects the desire for artistic teams to be involved in making their work accessible. In the old days, an external specialist would be brought in at the end of the creation process to add their signing or add their subtitles or add their description, and the creative team had very little involvement. In film, it's known as accessible filmmaking, and in theatre, we call it integrated description. So directors are thinking of lots of different ways of making sure that everybody can enjoy the show. So that doesn't mean necessarily that you're isolated by a headset. You have to listen to the description, which nobody else can hear. They're making description open. They're making it drive their creative practices. And I think it's a very exciting thing for everybody.
Accessible cinema.
I remember that once you said in an interview or maybe or at a conference that I attended, correct me if I'm wrong, audio description must be enhancing and not distracting.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the best way to do that, the first mistake many beginning describers do make in performing arts in particular is to try to describe everything. They're talking. And you know what? A blind person doesn't attend a play or watch a video or a film or go to a museum to hear the audio description.
Yes.
They're there for the play or the video or the film, and we are simply enhancing it, making it accessible. We're in the background, so we need to be in service to the form being described and the people accessing that form. So the third area is really where we spend the most time, or should perhaps, and that's language. We are translators. We are transferring it all to words. Vivid, concise, succinct language, objective language, language that creates an image in the mind's eye of the listener, even if that listener has been congenitally blind. But most of our audience, of course, is not blind from birth.
Yeah.
Most of our audience has some sight and can see if you tell them where to look, perhaps.
Yeah.
In any event, we use language to paint that picture. If our eyes could speak, what would they say?
Mm-mm-mm.
How would they say it vividly? So that's key. And in an echo of the editing fundamental, I think in the use of language, we need to be vivid. We need to sometimes see beyond what's there. In other words, use our imagination. That tower is as tall as a two-story building. Well, that's real simple. There's no two-story building there. It's just a tower.
Mm-hmm.
But if we imagine what's not there and verbalize it, we help people see. But even when we do all of that, we need to be spare. We need to be concise. We need to be succinct. As Blaise Pascal said at the end of a long letter to a friend, he wrote, "I've only made this letter longer because I've not had the time to make it shorter."
Accessible cinema.
What is re-speaking, Annalisa?
Yes, let's
I'm sure
start.
You are the best one to explain that because you teach re-speaking at
yes,
the
Yes, I teach re-speaking, and I am aware that perhaps we need to explain what it is and define it because it's not common knowledge yet. Re-speaking is one of the latest additions to the world of media accessibility and audiovisual translation. It is a technique that exploits speech recognition technology to convert spoken language into a written text. Speech recognition technology was first developed to enable people to use the computer or their car without using their hands. So for blind people or for people who had arthritis in their hands and they couldn't type. But then about 15 years ago in England, the BBC first began to pilot this technique to subtitle live programs. Now, the idea was that, of course, with recorded programs, you can subtitle them at your own leisure. You can type the subtitles normally. But whenever there is a live program or a live event, because the same thing can apply to a conference, for example, it is not possible to type the subtitles fast enough because you tend to speak much faster than people can type. In the past, the only way to subtitle a live program such as the TV news was to use stenotyping, which means using a sort of typewriter where the keys represent syllables instead of letters. But the trouble with that technique is that there are very few well-trained stenotypists, and they command very high salaries because you have to be highly skilled to be a stenotypist.
Just to explain to the listeners, it's something similar to what we see in the American films when there are...
Yes, courtroom reporters, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You see people typing away quite happily and they're transcribing what the defendant is saying in court.
They usually look very happy. I don't
know.
Yes,
well, I would be happy if I earned 5,000 euro a month. You know,
just typing.
Yeah, just typing. So yes, to get to that level, to type that fast and that accurately, it takes about 2 or 3 years of training. And so when speech technology came about, somebody had the idea of applying that to the subtitling world. So intralingual re-speaking, so re-speaking from one language into the same language to provide subtitles for the deaf, consists in listening to the input. So, for example, former President Obama giving a statement on television, repeating what former President Obama was saying, adding punctuation orally because it doesn't do it automatically for you, and formatting the text as a subtitle. In order to do that, you use dedicated software that is speaker-dependent, which means that the speaker has to train software to recognize his or her voice. You create your own voice profile, and the more you use it, the more accurate it gets. And then you can start using it and saying things like, "Mr. President, comma, it is a pleasure for me to be here today, full stop, new line." And that creates a subtitle.
Accessible cinema.
Among other things, the company I know that provides live subtitles. Is it correct, Miriam?
That is correct. We provide live subtitles for parts of the ZDF program.
Uh-huh.
They have a live subtitling department, but they cannot do all because live subtitling is very time-consuming.
Can you tell us more about this accessible service, Miriam?
And so the live subtitler, he is what, for example, the people on TV live say via earphones and repeats basically every word that is said on TV. Sometimes they skip words that are not so important, but they repeat it and speak it into an automatic speech recognition. Why is that? So if you have the speech recognition trying to repeat everything that the TV person says, it's not going to be recognized because you have to speak in a certain ductus and in a certain way. The speech recognition then recognizes what is said and puts it into writing. So while the re-speaker re-speaks, he listens what the person on TV continues to say. And while he does those two tasks, he also looks at what the speech recognition transcribes and, if necessary, needs to correct what is written because sometimes the speech recognition might just not correctly understand and transcribe what is said. So, for example, one example would be if the person says, "We want to explore the city," the speech recognition might recognize, "We want to explode the city." So this is something that needs to correct it because, I mean, it makes people laugh because it's obviously a mistake, but it's better to correct things.
Okay, so as for less subtitling, just trying to sum up, well, only the main outlines, the subject and the participants of a given program are known. I mean, the rest happens live, let's say, in real time and unpredictably.
Yeah, unpredictably. So then sometimes they know, for example, in a TV show, who are going to be the guests that are going to be invited. So
okay.
Accessible cinema.
How does this keyboard work, Wim? Because, of course, it has nothing to do with a computer keyboard, right? How does it work?
Well, it's quite a different way of typing. When you type on a normal keyboard, you press one key and you get one character each time.
Mm-hmm.
With the Felotab keyboard, the idea is that you type a chord of keys.
Mm-hmm.
So you press several keys simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
And with every chord of keys, you get a whole syllable or a whole word. So it's a very different way of typing, but in the end, much more efficient.
Okay, so by pressing several keys simultaneously, we can make, let's say, complete syllables and words. So instead of typing character by character, is it correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So being a quick way of typing, I imagine it is especially useful when we need to type at a higher speed. What are the main application contexts in which this keyboard is used, the WIM?
Well, the invention of the keyboard was basically just for anybody who wants to type at a quicker speed,
uh-huh.
speed and more efficiently. But eventually, the main applications for this keyboard are for the support of hard of hearing
mm-hmm.
in all different situations. So you can imagine you can use it at a big event where many people are watching your text, but even at the doctor or even at a job interview, when you sit next to somebody who is deaf or hard of hearing,
uh-huh.
you type directly what the conversation is about, and they can read along immediately. So it's a very good support for deaf and hard of hearing people.
Ah, okay.
And besides that, it's also being used for live subtitling for television through teletext for many years. So the people who watch television at home, they see the live subtitling also by the use of Felotype.
From cinema to live events, from conferences to TV programs, our previous guests took us on a journey through different contexts and solutions to make services and products accessible to a broader audience. Dr. Luis Fryer told us what integrated audio description is so that audio description can be part of the artistic product, while Dr. Joel Snyder focused on the importance of using vivid, concise and objective language when describing for blind and partially sighted people. Both Luis Fryer and Joel Snyder published a manual on audio description. Luis' book is entitled An Introduction to Audio Description, while Joel is the author of The Visual Made Verbal. You can buy them on Amazon, and both are of outstanding importance to anyone interested in audio description. This is how we can make an audiovisual product accessible for blind and partially sighted people. But what about deaf and hard of hearing people? Well, Annalisa Sandrelli told us more about respeaking, which is widely used to provide monolingual subtitling for the deaf and hearing impaired in many settings. Then Miriam Angman specifically focused on live subtitles as at the F Digital. But there is a further way to provide live subtitles, so not only by respeaking, but also by Velotype. And Wim Gerbex presented the Velotype keyboard, a product, as Wim said, that has revolutionized the way of typing, especially within the context of live subtitling. As our guests have just said, the goal is to make more and more services and products not only easier to access and simpler to use, but also and especially inclusive. So, what are the main challenges that we need to face? Where are we going? If you want to know more about the future of accessibility, stay with us. We'll be back soon.
We translate for those who can't understand. We write for those who can't hear. We describe for those who can't see. Subti, subtitles and accessibility for film, television and theatre. Subti.com.
Accessible Cinema on Global Accessibility Awareness Day, we are exploring the ways in which we can create a more accessible and inclusive society. And with days like this in our calendar, this goal could be achieved sooner than we think. So, what are our next steps? What are the main challenges? Well, we'll ask the experts. According to Esteia Onchis, postdoctoral researcher at Transmedia Catalonia, the focus must be on the users and their needs in each phase of the inclusive design process. Taking one step further, Elena Di Giovanni, associate professor at the University of Macerata, will discuss the importance of going towards participatory experiences in accessibility. And the goal of creating accessible tourism experiences for all, also to fight stereotypes in accessibility, is the main challenge of researchers and developers, according to Ivor Ambrose, managing director of the European Network for Accessible Tourism, interviewed by our Chiara Nicoletti. And speaking of stereotypes, Eva Espasa, senior lecturer at Università de Vic, interviewed again by our Chiara Nicoletti, will discuss the role that online teaching tools can play in this fight against stereotypes. Let's listen then to these four excerpts and don't miss the whole interviews, which are available on Fred's website. How important is quality, Esteia? Because I think that the focus of accessibility providers, but also researchers, but also users and professionals, has somehow gradually shifted from quantity to quality. What do you think, Esteia?
Yes, it is true. A lot of studies and research on audiovisual translation have focused since the beginning on which are the practices. Also, there has been a lot of research on corpus, which is which we could say it's a quantity thing.
Yeah.
But since the last years, the research in the audiovisual translation field,
media accessibility in general,
it's focusing and within audiovisual translation accessibility, it's focusing more and more on user approach, no?
Yeah.
It's taking a more and more user-centric approach.
Approach, yes.
So when talking on about accessibility, we have, as a researchers and also as a practitioners, we have also to take into account which is the position of the user, how the user is going to receive our outputs.
Accessibility services, yes.
Accessible cinema.
And the future of media accessibility is my last question. So how do you imagine the future of media accessibility?
We should perhaps shift the focus from accessibility to inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I think inclusion is a more positive word. And it's not like saying, I'll make sure that the film is accessible technically for you because you're not up to a certain standard. I'll try and make sure that you can sit next to me and enjoy a film so that entertainment
together.
Is for the whole family group or for everyone. And then another thing I've been working on and I really believe in, I think it's a romantic word when it comes to accessibility, but it's participation, which means inclusion even in production process, getting the end users involved in creating access services. And that's, to me, also empowerment, which means the end users are all together, people with a disability, people that have no disability, they work together, they feel like they're working for one and the same cause, and they will be promoting awareness and more accessibility or actually inclusion. So I see the future, I hope, that we will see the future of accessibility as inclusion.
Accessible cinema.
While talking to the people working on accessibility during these years, I noticed that there are two things that people normally, generally don't know, don't want to know. The first is among the facts that you listed in your presentation, and is it that 70% of disabilities are invisible. The second thing is that people and industries, companies seem to don't understand that the investment costs are not so high
I mean, if you invest generally in accessibility, then there will be a return in the amount of money that you spend, because in this case, there will be more and more people traveling.
Yeah, I think this. There are some kind of stereotypes, if you like, that as soon as you start talking about people with disabilities, a lot of people, a lot of businesses, they think immediately of people who are in wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And that's also reasonable. There are many people who need a wheelchair to travel and to get around. But actually, from the data that has been collected and some of the published data from Visit England, for example, shows that of people with disabilities who declare they have a disability when they're traveling in the surveys that they've done, the actual percentage of people with a wheelchair or using a wheelchair is about 6% of all those with a disability. The number of people with some kind of hearing impairment or hearing loss is about 25% of the people with disabilities. And clearly you need to do some work on your service. If you're a supplier in the tourism sector, if you have a hotel or if you have a restaurant, there are things you can do to make it possible for people to visit you and to use your facilities. And the most expensive things are usually the changing the infrastructure, changing the buildings, and that would be required for people in wheelchairs. But there are a lot of things you can do that hardly cost anything. For example, having a piece of paper and a pencil handy for people who communicate with sign language. If your staff don't communicate using sign language, then you should have these things on hand, or you should have a tablet or an iPad, something to communicate with. So the most simple things that can be very cheap but effective. And there's a whole host of things that we could talk about there. I mean, there are also some people have problems if they can't read a menu, or if a blind person can't read a menu. So there are apps nowadays that can read a menu or any kind of text aloud for you. So there are ways around this, and they're not always extremely expensive.
Accessible cinema.
How much you were mentioning how, you know, the stereotypes are always less and less, so that the situation is improving, is getting better. What are the let's say the things that you can do to increase this change even more, especially with your work? You teach online AD training, so you train people online. So how much have you changed your way of teaching AD considering this research?
Sometimes it's difficult to know exactly all the experience students have, what they know about blindness, for example. And sometimes there's one first stereotype we have to break, is that of the romanticizing or exoticizing the blind people's experience. And we work with this, looking at different films. And also, I mean, for example, we just break the ground, as it were, asking students to introduce themselves with a kind of audio description of sorts, which is written out in the campus. And then this is not a right or wrong exercise, but points out many of the features that people initially focus on what they describe about themselves, on what they would like to know about their fellow companions, etc. And then we compare them. And also, for example, we ask them to just listening to some the sound of a short film which is not audio described, to try and guess what should be audio described, in a way mimicking the ideal situation of having blind and sighted describers working together. But the first stereotype we have to break is that of having to describe everything, because blind people have a very strong culture, or filming culture, sound culture, etc., which makes them identify sounds more easily than for us. So one thing is to avoid this patronizing attitude through this exercise.
This is how our guests see the future of accessibility. User-centered approaches will lead the way, according to Estella Onces. But, as Elena Di Giovanni said, users will be also actively involved in the creation of access services, what she defines participatory accessibility. Moving from live events to tourism, as Ivor Ambrose said, ensuring equal access for all visitors can be a successful way to fight stereotypes in accessibility, while Eva Espasa discussed the role of online teaching tools in this fight against stereotypes.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 64th Berlin International Film Festival.
Io sono Valentina Pompili al Tokyo International Film Festival.
Soy Antonio Becker y estoy aquí con
el International Film Festival in Berlin. Mein Name ist Beatrice Beden.
Alan Begonfi, Fred Film Radio.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
In this special episode of Accessible Cinema on Global Accessibility Awareness Day, our guests from different countries and backgrounds shared the same idea. We can't cut someone out just because we haven't prepared for the way they might interact with our products and services. As our guest said, this is what being inclusive is about, making sure that everyone gets to do what they want to in a way that suits them. And when Global Accessibility Awareness Day is over, the accessibility efforts don't stop. For instance, if you want to keep track of what is going on in the field of media accessibility, you can visit MAP website, Media Accessibility Platform, where you can also listen to our next episode of Accessible Cinema. We have all got a role to play in this, as listeners, experts, users, scholars, professionals, providers, and as consumers of culture. So, our message today is, we all have a voice. Let's use it. Bye for now. This is Francesca Raffi and this is Fred Accessible Cinema on Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility. Sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances and other live events. Accessible cinema.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.